What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 101. Yes, we are officially on our way into the triple digits. Can you believe it? So cool. Anyways, my guest today is someone who I just happened to meet actually through a different venture that I do, and I was having a conversation with him. I'm like, this guy is just freaking awesome. Did a little more research, asked him on the podcast, obviously, and we just had an amazing conversation. Just somebody who I've now come to follow on social media, respect what he does, love what he does, and he's also somebody who's helping a ton of people. And I know with what him and I discussed in this episode, there's going to be some gold nuggets that you all can take away from it as well. So I really, really hope you enjoy it. Also, too, if you haven't, I'm going to keep telling you, you've got to go to crossomeats.com, sign up for the subscription, get it delivered to your door every month on like right around the first, second, maybe the third of every month. You'll never have to worry about going to the store. You'll never have to worry about like, what meat do I buy? Where did this meat come from? Is it going to poison me because it's like green? Yeah, you won't have to worry about any of that nastiness. Plus, we all know how important it is to make sure that you're getting the absolute best red meat in your diet. Don't listen to those quacks on there telling you to eat broccoli all day. Listen, all I eat is meat, guys. I'm better than like more in shape, fitter than I've ever been. And so, hey, I'm a walking testament. You got to get yourself some Crosso meats. I know you'll love it. CrossOmeats.com. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, what is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. I am super excited to talk to my guest today, and I know you'll love him. This is someone who played Division I football at Alabama State and then went on to become a professional MMA fighter. After that, he's gone on to become a world-renowned strength and conditioning coach. He spent his adult life dedicated to helping people crush their performance goals, create longevity, as well as build their mental strength and become the best versions of themselves. The list of people that he's trained is like a who's who in this athlete and celebrity world, such as MMA fighters like Dustin Poirier, Junior Dos Santos, Kobe Covington, as well as countless NFL players and even people like actor Kevin James and music mogul Timbaland. He's also been featured on ESPN, ESPN Plus, Fox Sports, the NFL Network, and the list goes on and on. What really sets him apart is his commitment to people, the way he stays on the cutting edge, and just being an all-around badass. I want to welcome on Phil DeRue. Again, Phil, I appreciate you coming on.
I like that. I like that intro, man. Thanks, Derek. I appreciate you having me, man. And we just talked about it off air. It's like, it's very hard to intro yourself. I feel so awkward doing that. So I appreciate you, man.
Dude, you're a humble guy, right? It is. I agree, though. It's always hard. It's like, so yeah, tell me about yourself. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm a badass. I've trained all these people, right? Like, no, yeah. No one wants to do that. So I guess just to start with, though, because after we talked last week for something different, obviously got a chance to kind of dive into some of the stuff you do, following you on Instagram. But I mean, it sounds like you've kind of been training from a pretty young age, right? Like, when did you really first get into physical strength and really pushing yourself?
I mean, I've always been an athlete all my life. So I started playing, I was a martial artist since I was 4 years old. So that kind of got me into doing the calisthenics thing, you know, push-ups, sit-ups, squats and jumps and running and climbing and all that. So general physical preparedness has been a part of my life since I was, 4 years old. Sports has been a part of my life since I was, a young kid. So for that, I always had to get ready for particular sports, and that kind of molded my mentality in a way, right? It molded my character. It allowed me to understand how to be a team player. It allowed me to be accountable and be respectful, but also be able to dominate when the time comes and put myself on the line and go out there and challenge myself. And so that kind of aided on in my approach to how I coach and how I run my business. When I started training for weight training, it was primarily, I think it was around 13 or 14 years old. My grandfather actually brought me to a Gold's Gym one day, and I was just like, I kept bugging him to take me, because my grandfather was about 75 years old, but could bench well over 315 pounds at the time. So he put like three plates on the bar, and at 75 years old, you really don't see that a whole lot. So The dude was real strong. And it showed me like, all right. And he dedicated his life to that at a later age. Like he didn't start weight training until he was 60 something years old. And then really started to build it up because he had problems with his heart and so on and so forth. So I bugged him enough to where he told me to go to his gym. And then I started working out there and I wanted to get ready for high school football. So, you know, I got all my teammates together. I got all the kids in the neighborhood and I actually was able to round up some weights, you know, from like junkyards and just getting whatever I could, cinder blocks and tires. And then my mother actually got me the greatest gift of all, which was a barbell. And from there it was over. I didn't have a bench, but I had a barbell. We weren't that rich. We weren't rich at all. We were pretty poor. So like what I did was I utilized everything that I could. And we ended up doing floor pressing and bent over rows and squats with it and front squats. And I just did everything I saw in the magazines and what I saw in books. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, and I got to understand how to really program and put myself in positions to where I was actually going to benefit from actually strength training and having those solid progressions built into where you're peaking on time and everything else. And so I ran into a couple of things and what really, you know, what really brought me to strength in general was not just, you know, the overall outcome of getting stronger and building your muscle, but the protocols and the way of doing it, right? So as I went through it, I went through this journey of seeing myself change. And that was really beneficial from a young man's perspective as, you know, I'm trying to get stronger, I'm trying to build my body, but at the same time, I'm trying to build confidence. So what that did was give me the confidence to step into, you know, a varsity football team at a freshman level and pretty much take over the field and not have any self-doubt, which came from the weight room in a sense. So that's where I could say that. And then from there, just kind of steamrolled forward. Started learning everything I could from there. Went to college, studied exercise science, played college football, you know, picked the brains of all my strength and conditioning coaches down the way. And then I ultimately started to put myself in my own position where I'm a coach now, but I used to train myself for my professional fights. So I would find out ways to get myself better in the fighting world. And that was totally different from football, which I had to change a lot of the modalities and the methodologies that I had for football, because again, a football sport is like short sprints and then rest, short sprints and then rest. With MMA, it's a sprint, but then it's a marathon. You know, you have to go in and out. It's acyclical movements. It's different bioenergetic demands. So you're going to have to know exactly how to put this in place to allow yourself or your athlete that you're working with to be successful inside the cage. And so I started to read up on that, started to develop my own methods. And fast forward a little bit later, I've been able to take those methods that I use for myself and put those with, you know, world-class athletes like Dustin Poirier and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's been good. At the same time, I think that the weight room, it helps an athlete, but it also helps general people find themselves in a sense, because you cannot go through a workout without feeling some type of discomfort, some type of challenge. And I do believe challenges help mold an individual. It helps them create that character, right? And that can get them over any hump, that can give them humility, that can teach them how to be diligent and also respect the weights, which is something that a lot of people that you see on gym fails probably won't do, right? So the weights will humble you real quick.
So you got started with your own gym at 22. I assume that's what, like right out of college, right? That was kind of, rather than going and maybe getting a job and all that, like you actually started your own gym at 22, right?
Yeah. Like, so I was doing personal training on the side while I was in school, but I was doing it, you know, behind the backs of the NCAA actually, because I wasn't supposed to have a job, wasn't supposed to make money. They wouldn't let you at that time. Now it's a little bit more lenient. So I would do that. And then when I got out of school, I actually had to leave school early because my mother got developed lupus, which is an autoimmune disease, and my father got in a bad car accident. So there was no money coming into the house. My sister is about 10 years younger than me. I pretty much raised her. And I just didn't want them to go through any types of struggles that I went through as a young kid. And I could see it kind of going downhill more and more. So I had made a big decision and I ended up canceling my scholarship and coming back to Florida. And so I was at my, I was my junior, my sophomore, about to go into my junior year, and ended up leaving and basically giving up my dream of playing in the NFL and all that other stuff. And was like, all right, now I need to man up, find a way to still compete because that's in my blood. I need to do that. Martial arts has always been, you know, a passion of mine. It's in my heart. It's always been there. So I was like, okay, I like to box. I like to grapple, you know, here and there. I wrestled in high school and so on and so forth. So I was like, all right, I'll make the switch to MMA, but I still need to make money. So I was sneaking people into Gold's Gym, sneaking people into like LA Fitness and everything else. And I would make like $20, $30 an hour. You know what I'm saying? They just hand me cash. And that kind of helped me, you know, basically buy my own food at the time, which allowed my mom and my dad to really, it gave them a little bit less stress per se. So I was able to help them out a little bit there. And then ultimately I got a job as an independent contractor with a strength and conditioning gym that was nearby that I was actually training out of for my own fights. So I was about 21 years old and I just turned pro. And so I was paying all this rent in a gym, and I started to pick up more clients. To say that, you know, obviously I was making a lot of money, so I don't blame the guy for, you know, charging me more rent. But I was like, okay, if I'm paying all this rent, I might as well just open up my own space. And that's what ended up happening. I ended up opening up my own facility. And then I started off with like 12 people, 800 square feet, nothing major. It's probably as big as my garage right now. I just started training people and I ended up meeting my wife. She came to the gym for the first time and kicked it off. But at that time, I was a professional fighter opening up his own gym business. I'm about 22 years old and I have no business sense whatsoever, by the way, at this point, right? I only know about training, you know, getting people stronger and fighting at this point, right? So, you know, I learned a lot. I learned on the job per se. And so you fast forward a little bit later and I could see my focuses were going all over the place. And that was where the issue lies. And so ended up dropping 2-3 fights that I shouldn't have lost. Stupid mistakes just because I wasn't training enough, you know, and usually I'm training one to two times a day for 6 or 7 days a week. And when I opened up the gym, I was probably training maybe 3 times a week at most because I was running all these classes. So yeah, I took a major hit there and I had to really think about what was going to go down. Like, what was my future? Ended up making a change from the 800 square feet. I expanded now because we just grew out of that space so quickly. Went from 800 square feet to 1600 square feet. And then from there, I went to 11,000 square feet. So I grew very fast. And the reason why is because I was in a small area and I was the only one in that area that was doing what I was doing. So word grew quickly. You know, I had a lot of referrals from all the clients because everybody went to school together. Everybody grew up around each other. So they invited their friends, their coworkers, their family members, and it just grew like that. And it was, you know, obviously it's real organic in a sense. So we fast forward and now I have, you know, roughly, you know, 200 members, 200 to 300 members in and out of the gym. I have multiple trainers at this time and I'm around 24, 25 years old. So I'm in charge of 7 other trainers, you know, a bunch of people in the gym, 11,000 square feet. But again, I still wanted to fight. I still wanted to be a professional athlete. And so I put some things together to where I was able to actually delegate as much time as I needed to allow myself to train, and ended up my last fight being very successful with the last fight, my last professional fight, which I'm happy with. And then, about, I would say 3 months later, I get ready for another fight and ended up getting a concussion in sparring. And it was a freak accident. One of my teammates came down with a kick and hit me in the back of the head. And I just was out of it for a while. I didn't get knocked out, and I finished the training session, but I just wasn't there. You know, equilibrium was way off. I had headaches. I was nauseous, all the symptoms. And I've had multiple concussions over the years. So I've had to battle back from concussion after concussion since I was about 7 or 8 years old playing football. My first concussion, I was 8 years old. So altogether, what I can count is about 8 or 9 major concussions, but again, there's those impact hits throughout years and years of training and playing football and fighting. So I went to neurologists and they said, you know what, man, you're gonna have to either stop getting hit in the head or you're gonna get Alzheimer's by the time you're 50. So I had a big decision to make, obviously, right? So my wife was pregnant at the time. She was pregnant with my son. And I was going back to get my PhD. I wanted to continue my education. I wanted to level up on my training and my coaching. But I was going to school, and I remember going to FAU, Florida Atlantic, and I was like listening to the professor, and I wasn't catching things as quick as I usually do. And I had to write down more, and I'm like, what's going on? And again, that kind of scared me because I was a guy that always picked up things pretty quickly, you know? So that scared me for a little bit. And this was about, and again, this was recent from when I got the concussion. It was about 2 or 3 weeks after I got the concussion. So I still had concussion syndromes and things like that. But it scared me. So then I ended up asking my coach, you know, what did you think? And he was like, man, if it was your knee or your elbow, we can work around it, but it's your brain. You really don't want to mess with that. And so he was like, you got a successful business. You're a great coach. We can always do something else. Let's figure it out. But I don't think you should be fighting anymore. And it still hurts me to this day, but at the same time, I live vicariously through my guys, you know? So it's fun to watch, you know, Dustin put on a show, and I work with, you know, major athletes, Joanna and Jacek. You know, I work with Frankie Edgar and Edson Barbosa, and these guys, man, it's like watching them catapult their careers and take it to the next level. And then watching them on the biggest stage in the UFC is just, it's, you know, it's your own self-power personified in a sense. So that's where I truly find my own passion in coaching, and I enjoy it tremendously. Now I'm looking to coach other coaches, which is something that's really a passion of mine, really get the word out and help other people, and help other people that want to do what I do or want to do what I did. So that's my path. That's my ultimate goal right now.
Wow. How crazy. So I want to ask, because I obviously, when it comes to the MMA stuff, like I've never done that. I played football and stuff like that. But like, what are you thinking? Like, you're going out there to fight some dude who, you know, is tough, right? Or else they wouldn't be fighting you. Yeah. Like, what's going through your brain when you're getting into the ring? Are you just thinking about your own training? Are you thinking about the other person and how to attack them? Like, what goes through your mind when you're going to a professional fight?
You know, it starts the day you sign the contract, honestly. The day you sign the contract to fight that individual, it depends on the fighter, really. But I know what I did. You know, I would take a quick look at who he was. I take a look at the record. I take a look at, you know, all my homework that I need to do. Then I let my coaches deal with that. After that, I have to deal with what I have to deal with, which is get myself better, get myself prepared. And every day in training, I'm thinking about that individual. I'm thinking about how I'm going to beat him, how I'm going to outsmart him, how I'm going to out-strategize, how, you know, have better tactics, just have a better winning game plan.
One of the things, and maybe it's different for everybody, but do you like hate that person in that moment? Or like, is there anything like that that fuels you?
No, I mean, you'll have guys that, and this is different because I never really had that situation happen to me where I actually truly hated an individual, but I've had fighters that I coach that have to deal with that, you know, and that's unfortunate because it takes away from the clear-headedness of the approach of the game plan, because it is all strategy, right? At the end of the day, I hate to say it's a sport because it is very brutal and there is a lot going on. But what I can say is it's a form of combat that is hand-to-hand, obviously, and you have to have a strategic approach to everything that you do. And that goes from the weigh-ins, you know, even with the press conference, all the way up into the cage when you're staring them down, when you walk towards them and you're touching gloves or you're not touching gloves, to backing up to the cage, looking them in the eyes and looking as confident as you can, but going through your mind, what is the first 3 to 4 combinations or whatever you're trying to do as a game plan is going to be when that bell rings. And so it's not about hating. It's about wanting to beat them and be better. Just simple and plain. And so if that takes an individual to actually have to hate somebody, I've known fighters that have to, you know, feel some type of way about the person that is going to stand, you know, across from them. And a lot of people can't stand in the same room sometimes as their opponent. But I never really had that. I never had any, you know, malintent or any type of feelings towards the guy I was fighting, unless they did something disrespectful, in which that never really happened, which was fortunate for me, you know, but there is some times where that does happen.
Well, I'm always curious because you'll see the weigh-ins and you'll see kind of the drama and the pushing and shoving. And I think a lot of people, it's like, is that real? Is that to sell more tickets? Because there has to be, especially with some of the guys that you train that are top level, right? Like guys like Conor McGregor get eyeballs on the screen because they either love what he does or they hate what he does. But either way, they want to watch what he does, right? And so I'm always curious, like, is that stuff real? Like, I know the fighting is real and I know that that's obviously very real. But some of the, I don't know if it's theatrics or if some of these dudes are like, yeah, I truly would kill you if I could, right? Like, I'm always curious how real that is.
Some is real. Some is very real, I should say.
Yeah.
Some is for theatrics. Some are for you getting in the head and having a strategy, right? Having that game plan already set. Conor does that very well. He knows, or he's done it very well in the past, right?
But it also, sorry to cut you off, but also too, now that he's kind of been getting his ass kicked, it kind of like wears me out a little now, right? It's like, dude, it's cool. Like talk all the trash you want, but at some point you got to win a fight or else it's just white noise. Yeah.
No, 100%. I think he's like 3-5 or something like that in his last at bat with his MMA fights, you know? So yeah, it comes to a point where it's like, all right, you're all talk now, or you're, the talk that you've been doing, you can tell that that's been helping him throughout time, but skill level goes up, right? Talent goes up. There's new talent that comes into the sport every day. Guys that, you know, were, you know, semi 500 are now on top of the world, you know, because guys get better, right? They learn more and they learn and they grow and they get better from being in the sport for so long. And you end up having something like Dustin, where, you know, Dustin's been fighting in the UFC for well over almost 10 years, you know, or at least in Zuffa for 10 years, which is with the WEC and then the UFC. And, you know, he fought Conor when he was a young kid. They both were young. But you could tell the leaps and bounds of, you know, technical efficiency, of game plan strategy, not just in this fight, the one that just happened, because that was a freak accident, but the last fight, on just how he was able to pick him apart and not be bothered by all the stuff that he was doing beforehand. Or, you know, the first fight he was acting nice, and that could have thrown somebody off too as well. A guy that's been synonymous with being, you know, that guy that always talks a lot of crap and wants to get in your face, and then all of a sudden now he's nice, and that's a little weird, right? So that could have threw him off, but that didn't either. So a guy that has no real worry as far as the outside noise. And that's funny because DP says this a lot. It's like, that's just noise. At the end of the day, we're going to get in the cage, we're going to fight. And that's really where my world is. And that's true. And a true fighter doesn't let that or allow that to deter him from the ultimate goal and the game plan. And so, you know, you have guys that do that for that particular reason. And then you have those guys that really do hate each other from past beef. And that just trickled over into the fight. And I know a bunch of guys that I've trained before that have those real beefs. Like if they see each other on the street, it will happen. You know what I mean? So, and that's where the fights get interesting, you know, because you have to have controlled aggression, you know, and that's where you'll see like real good fighters overcome the adversity and overcome all the odds because they have that ability to strike when it's time to. They're not too cautious, but they're not too aggressive, right? They know when to strike when the time's right.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm curious about too, because, and this happens, I think, in every area of life, whether you're training fighters, whether you're running a business, is complacency, right? Like it's easy for some of these guys who grew up dirt poor, right? And they've clawed and they fought their way. And all of a sudden, like life is good, right? Like they have money. They have, maybe they're married now. They have a family. Like whether it's the guys that you've trained or maybe even within business, like if someone's battling that complacency, like what would you, I don't know, urge them to do? How do you power through that? Because I think complacency is one of the things that like make a lot of men, especially, sedate, right? Yeah. It's like, I've got the job, I've got the cars, I've got the business, I've got all the stuff I'm supposed to have. I'm just complacent. I'm not building. I'm not growing. Like, how do you train people through that plateau, if you will?
Well, you see that plague a lot of successful individuals, right? We're talking about an individual that we just, you know, obviously just spoke of.
Yeah. Happened. I saw a big name guy actually say, like, I think that's his problem, right? Like, this is a dude that had to claw and fight his way to get there. And now he's there. He's arrived. Where do you go from there?
Well, you look at all the guys in the NFL, all the guys in the NBA, you know, at some point you're like, okay, I made it. Now what? And that's where, you know, guys will sit out a couple plays, or, you know, they may not make it a mini camp, or, you know, something like that, because, hey, I got millions in the bank. Or boxers are the worst.
Yeah.
You know, guys that, you know, they come from nothing. They're dirt poor and they get all this money and they're like, man, I'm not trying to get punched in the face again.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to run around the ring for, you know, 10 or 12 rounds. But it comes back to understanding your true purpose. And if your purpose in the beginning was just money and that materialistic venture, it's not going to last long. Right. You're not going to reach the upper echelon of greatness. Your legacy will be tarnished because your purpose stopped at that car you wanted. It stopped at that house you wanted. It's not just about that, right? Whether you believe in God or the universe or whatever, you have to look at why are you here? What is your purpose? Why have you been put on this earth? And then you have to go for what you feel is that purpose. And all in all, your talents, because you've been gifted those talents, you are obligated to take it to the next level each and every time. So it's just like a game, right? You think about, okay, I made it to one level. I mastered that level. You can't stay at that level. Otherwise the game ends, right? You have to go to the next level and to the next level and to the next level. And then ultimately, when it's all said and done and you're 50, 60 years old, you're too old for the game and you can sit back and have no regrets whatsoever, that's when you truly know you put it all on the line and complacency was a non-factor.
Do you feel like you've ever struck, because I know for me, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I was planning on going and playing college football, had a shoulder injury to my throwing shoulder, wasn't able to end up going. And I kind of spiraled for a while, right? Cause it was like, that was almost like my purpose. Yeah. And I think that happens as well, right? People put all their purpose into a business and they build it up and their life is great. And then the business crashes or something, they put all their value in their marriage ends. And so they spiral. Like, I know you've gone through that, right? Like you went through the football and then you had to leave and then it's like, okay, now I'm going to be a pro fighter. And then you had to, you know, walk away from that. Like, yep. Did you ever struggle with kind of making the transition or is it something you've always just had that ability to power through?
I know a lot of people have that issue. I meet a lot of people, that work for me now, you know, Maureen Shea, my assistant, 2-time world champion. She's 40 something years old. She wanted to box another round. She wanted to fight for another title. There's no point. At the end of the day, you've done what you could do in the sport. For me, I would say it's always time. You always should have that ability to pivot, right? And that word is really prevalent in my vocabulary because I pivot on a lot of things, but I pivot for the good. And the reason why is because if I were to stop at a fork in the road, because of the fact that my tire blew out and I couldn't call AAA or I have no abilities to change the tire, what am I going to do? Am I just going to sit there and wait till somebody just passes me by all day long and I ultimately die? Or am I going to just go ahead and walk that path that I need to? It may not be as fast as with the car, but I damn sure can jog to the next exit. So basically what I'm saying is that there's always another way. There's always another route. And if you allow yourself to broaden your spectrum of understanding of your purpose, it's not just to be a great football player. It's not just to be a great entrepreneur. It's what's an overall goal, right? And again, like I said, I go back to religion for me. I'm a godly man. I would say that for me, it's to love and know God and to do the things that he's put me on this earth to do. Now, with that being said, right, I need to always provide for my family. So money does become the issue. So you have to know where your talents lie to allow yourself to make that money. So I think that when people have that roadblock, you know, it's a very difficult time, but I love that process. Don't get me wrong. I have times, you know, in days that I'm like, man, I wish this, or maybe this could happen. And then I think back and I have to check myself, and I'm blessed to be here. I'm blessed to be a human being on this earth right now, even though all this crazy stuff's going on right now in this world, right? I could be a centipede. I could be a turtle, you know, but I'm a human being on earth that has been gifted talents that is beyond measure. And with those talents, you can create more skill. Who knew? You can learn things. You can grow. You can help other people grow. And so with that, it never stops, right? Even though you get the flat tire, change the damn tire, man. Or walk your ass to the next exit.
I love it. I love it. So with the talk around purpose, obviously you're training people, but I think that along with that can provide purpose, right? And one of the reasons why I work out, and I've had people be like, what are you training for? Why are you working out? Why are you doing this? And it's like, for me, it helps me serve my purpose, right? Because I feel like if I get up, I work out, it gets kind of the anxiety out of me. Like, it makes me feel better. Yep. That helps me with my purpose. I mean, do you kind of see that as well? Like, people coming in and being like, I feel better. You know, like you said, I'm building confidence. I can see a little line here that I didn't used to see, or a vein there, right? Like, I mean, do you think that being physically strong is something that helps actually chase your purpose?
Man, it's not just physical. It's mental, it's psychological, it's emotional, it's spiritual. And you can get all that in the weight room. You can get all that, you know, by overcoming that bar, right? And pushing yourself to the limit. Now, it doesn't just mean in the weight room too as well. You can do that by going for a run. You can do that by going for a swim. Put yourself in an uncomfortable position to get yourself stronger, right? So strength means plenty of different things. But when I truly think about it, it's just getting your body and your mind the ability to withstand the forces put upon you and be able to push back with equal or more amount of force. So with that, yeah, like, I have to get up and train. If I don't train, I'm useless. I'm in a bad mood. Like, I'm short with people. Like, I really need this. This is almost an addiction, but it's a healthy addiction in my mind. But for me and for everybody that I come across, Timbaland, for instance, right? Everybody knows Timbaland, world renowned record producer. He told me the other day, if he wasn't doing the strength and conditioning that he was doing with me, or with whatever he was doing, he wouldn't be the person he is today. He would be useless. And that's coming from a man that has so much success in his industry, in his world, that he still goes back down and puts himself in the dirt and puts himself in uncomfortable situations and makes himself, let's face it, he's not the most athletic guy in the world, right? But he puts himself out there because he knows that this is something that he needs. These are all the most successful people that I've come across. And I'm asking them these questions, and they're all telling me pretty much the same thing. If they didn't push themselves physically to enhance their mental capabilities, to enhance their emotional responses, to enhance their spiritual connection, they are useless. So I put it all together. I was like, well, damn, everybody needs to push themselves, and everybody needs to get stronger by putting themselves in uncomfortable situations and allowing themselves to be comfortable with those uncomfortable situations.
Do you find it easier when you have a goal? I know we were talking before we actually started recording, you know, starting off with like some half Ironman stuff and some trainings like that. Like, is that something you try to do? Do you always have like maybe something you're training for, or is it just training to train?
I mean, you know, it's always, I'm always going to train, right? But I love to compete. That's just in my nature, you know. My wife hates it to this day. Like, you know, she's been with me since I was a fighter. She knew I played sports all my life, but she's never played sports. So it's total opposite, right?
This is me and my wife too. Same thing. Right? We play, you know, me and my kids are playing chess, and it's like, no, I don't care if you're 6 years old. I'm kicking your ass. Like, I'm going to beat you. Yeah. I don't lose. All right.
Okay. I'm telling you, it's funny with me and my son. I make sure that he understands that I still got him.
Exactly. It's like, why don't you let him win every once in a while? Because I'm not going to let him win. He's got to earn the win. I mean, is that so bad? Like, I'm going to make him earn the win. I mean, come on.
That's it, man. But that breeds, you know, hard work. That breeds, you know, success in so many ways, man.
Humility. Like something seriously, not to get on the soapbox, but something that I wish that we had more of anymore is people that understood that losing happens and it sucks and you want to do anything you can to avoid it. But, you know, if everyone gets a trophy, even if you get 12th place, there's kind of part of it that's like, whatever, I got a trophy, I get to leave. And it's like, no, like, come on, have a little competitive nature, like want to compete, want to win.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's a good and a bad thing. Like, I hate to lose, but I also know I need to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's a necessity because you learn from those losses for sure. 100%. If I would have kept fighting and kept winning and I would have got the concussion, I still would have been fighting. Right. So there had to have been some transition. There had to be some thought, you know. But yeah, I mean, that makes so much sense. And then from there, it's like, well, what am I going to do now? What is the ultimate goal? And for me, I cannot just aimlessly go through the training session. Like, I hate the word workout because that's like, it reminds me of just like, all right, I'm going to go in there and get a pump. I'm going to go in there and just get a sweat. I need to train for something and I need to put myself in a position to possibly fail. And that pushes me to go in there and train the way I train. Cause you're not going to be able to do the things that I do if you don't have an end goal. And an end goal that's almost bigger than just your personal things, right? I want to put myself on the line. I want to put myself out there. So that if I do fail, it's on me and I don't want to look bad. That is what it is. I'm not a guy that goes out there and half-asses it. I don't mind losing if I almost die out there, right? Yeah. I don't mind that, but I'm not going to quit. So I may pass out, right? I may be crawling to the finish line, but I will not quit. And that's where my training comes into mind. Was like, all right, do I want to crawl across the finish line or do I want to sprint across the finish line? I want to sprint across the finish line. So I'm going to put my effort into this no matter how I feel, you know? And that's what got me to go run today.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so important too that, I talked about this actually a few weeks ago. So we had a situation where we live, we have, you know, it's a lot of mountains, but we also have rivers. So we have like sandy beaches here, even though we're in the middle of the mountains, right? And my son got stuck in a current and ended up actually almost drowning. And really the only thing that saved him was the fact that we were able to get him to shore. So there was like this current, this big ledge, not to go through the whole thing. But one of the things I've done in the last about a year is got real serious about training. And I haven't necessarily been training for anything like an Ironman or something, but it was just like, you know, I'm getting older in life. I'm 38 now. I'm nearing in 40. Like I want to be fit, right? Like I'm training to be fit functionally. I want to be able to go out, run around with my kids. And that day I've never been as exhausted as what I was trying. He was on my back and I'm trying to swim into a current to get him back to this ledge.
Yeah.
And somehow or another, we were able to do it. My brother had to jump in who thank God happened to be there and we were able to get him in. And I've never been that tired in my life. And I just kept sitting there thinking like, if I hadn't been training, like we might be driving home without him today. Like that kept going like all day. It was weird, man. It was like this freaking horror movie that kept going in my face as he was going up and down, like basically drowning right next to me. Right. And that's the one thing that I've kind of been on a kick on the podcast recently is that you may not know what you're training for, but if you haven't been training and that situation happens, Like, I don't know how I would live with myself if it was like, yeah, I was 80 pounds overweight. I couldn't swim, right? I had no endurance. I had no strength. And I watched my son die because my fat ass wouldn't go and train, right? Like, that's me personally. I'm not saying anybody listening to the podcast, like, if you're overweight, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying me personally, that would have been my thought. And I just kept thinking, that's exactly why I'm training. I'm training for that type of stuff, right? Oh. And so I think that all ties together with kind of what you're talking about.
Man, you're training for the unpredictable,
yeah.
You know, and that's training for life, you know, and in all actuality, that's the goal for sure. Like, yeah, I want this competition because there's a site, but there's definitely other things that come to mind, right? That's why I like to go shoot. That's why I still train martial arts, right? That's why I need to learn how to like make fire, like literal, like things that are actually going to help survival. And that's when you're like, man, when this shit hits, I'm going to be ready no matter what. And that's where you train for the unpredictable. And I think that's very commendable. And God bless, man. I'm glad that your son's all right, man. That's crazy.
It was. It was like, I've never been. So it was weird. Like after it happened, like my heart was beating all weird. I was like, is this what a heart attack feels like? But I was just like, I was so exhausted. Like I've just never felt to where like, I couldn't like move almost. It was, and I know it was the adrenaline and like the fear and everything else kind of all coming together with the exhaustion, but I just kept thinking like, thank God, like I'd been training. Like, thank God there's been a lot of my adult life to where I've been like 40, 50 pounds overweight, probably at least 30 pounds overweight. And it was like, I just happened to do the 75 hard challenge, which kind of gave me some different like disciplines and a little bit of things to like carry over. And that led to the next thing and eating better. And it was just like, geez, if this would have happened probably even a year and a half ago, like it could have been a totally different outcome. So yeah, I think it's a testament to like train, right?
Sure. And that's where like you have to be strong at all aspects, right? It's one thing because I power lifted, I did bodybuilding, I've done strongman competitions, I've done a lot of things. You have to be really well versed. You got to be strong enough, you know, to lift, you know, double, triple body weight, just in general. What do you have to lift a car up? You never know. Get somebody out from underneath the car or get a, you know, whatever, crazy stuff, right? But you also may have to run a marathon to get away from something, right? Or, you know, something to that nature, not maybe a marathon, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but, and there's where that hybrid approach comes in for me. And it's like, all right, I want to be prepared for any situation, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Right. You have to be tactical. You have to know certain things. You have to be skillful. You have to be strong, obviously, but you have to have the endurance and you have to have the mental fortitude. When you have all those things together, you're going to be unbreakable. And that's really where a man comes into play. And that's where, like, I talk a lot about, you know, more man things than anything, because I'm a man. I can't talk for females.
Yep.
But there comes a time where you're going to have to protect the ones that are looking out, you know, or looking for you for protection, and you have to look out for them. And so you have to be prepared.
Yeah. One of the reasons when we moved back to the ranch, right, is man, things are just getting weird. Like, and this has been almost 3 years now to the day that we actually moved back and have all the room that we have now. But it was like, if we're there and things keep getting weirder, which they've only increased the weirdness by like 500 times, I think, in the last couple of years. But it's like, okay, like we've got space, you know, we've got to be functionally fit. Like, no, the preparedness is huge. It is absolutely huge. And that was a big reason why we wanted to move back. It's like, man, like if the world starts burning down around us, we're pretty much in the middle of nowhere. It's going to take them a while to get to us, and we'll be ready for them by then.
I love it, man. I'm looking for some land and probably going to either Tennessee or Georgia or something like that. Maybe I'll come up to you.
Idaho's nice, man. Idaho's nice. Like mountains. Yeah,
I've never ever was like, I may go live in Idaho, but now I'm thinking it's possible.
Hey, you could come visit and we'll give you a little test run. It's pretty sweet out here. Well, nice. I do want to start wrapping up with you though. I seriously appreciate your time, your conversation. Obviously on the podcast, we talk a lot about liberation, which is just the mindset. And we've got a good snapshot of that. Lifestyle, kind of the way that you've been able to live and the way that you've been able to design your life. I love that as well. Lastly is the legacy. I guess you're still young, obviously. You still got a ton of things I know that you'll accomplish. But I guess as you look over all the things you've done, you know, the businesses, the athletics, the training, the accolades, everything that you've done, I don't know, if we were to fast forward 40, 50 years down the road, like What do you hope the legacy of Phil DeRue is going to be?
I want to be remembered for being able to influence and drive people towards their passion. I want to be able to be remembered for someone who was strong in his approach and led by example, leading from the front, and being known as a leader that was capable of communicating and not dictating, and being someone who people can count on when times get rough, to look at based off of my own actions. So I know that's a lot, but pretty much, hopefully I got enough time, I can make it happen.
Well, you're already doing it, right? Like, you're already doing it. You've got a big following on Instagram, which is where I was going to go next. You've got the YouTube following. So obviously people are being inspired. So yeah, you're doing it. That was going to be the next thing, though. Like, obviously I know people are going to want to come check you out. Like, is Instagram the best? YouTube? How does everyone find you?
I mean, a lot of my videos are on YouTube, Phil DeRue. You can find me on a search. And then my Instagram, you can DM me a lot. I answer a lot of my DMs. It's DeRue Strong. And then my Twitter is at DeRue Strong. My website is DeRueStrong.com. Very simple.
Awesome. So make sure you guys go check him out. There's tons of good videos on there. Just a lot of motivational stuff. Get to see, see you flex a little, right? One of these days, man, I'm building there. I've been trying to cut the fat. Now maybe I could start building the muscle look like you, right?
Oh man, we could do it, man. Come down to Florida. We'll train.
I know. It's awesome. It's awesome down there. I've been down there a couple times, but definitely for sure. Well, hey, make sure to check them out. And you do a lot of online training too, right? That I've seen. Like you have online.
Yep, we have online programs, online custom programs too as well. I also have for coaches, I have a mentorship program. I have over 800 and almost 900 coaches from around the world on that. So we got a huge group of people and good coaches out there. So but that's where you'll find all that stuff on the website too as well.
Yeah. So, and that's just DeRueStrong.com, right? Just to verify. Yep. So DeRueStrong.com. That's DaruStrong.com. Make sure you guys check it out. Follow him on Instagram, subscribe on YouTube, check him out. He's a good dude, doing a lot of good stuff. Thanks again, Phil. I appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.